The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The December issue of Our State Magazine is their annual Christmas issue. First up is the welcome message called Christmas Presents by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. For most of the year, Christmas lived in the stacks of boxes, bins, and crates stored beneath the eaves of our staircase and stowed away in the walk-in closet of the spare bedroom. But come December, my parents set about transforming our home into something like a holiday dream. Garlands of greenery twined around the banister and draped from the fireplace mantel. A 7-foot Fraser fir, fresh and fragrant as the woods themselves, arrived in the bed of my dad's red pickup. We'd stand it by the den window, its branches outstretched, welcoming us back to the season. In the dining room, a smaller tree sparkled with soft white lights. My mother tied perfect red velvet bows to the grapevine wreaths on the front and back doors, and my dad, ever attentive to details, placed electric candles in each window, meticulously hiding the cords behind pine cones and ornaments, all to keep the magic alive. Christmas in our house was a grand occasion, spilling its warmth and cheer into every corner. But time, inevitably, has reshaped those days. The boxes that once overflowed are smaller now, fewer bins, fewer crates. What once filled closets fits neatly on a few shelves in my mother's townhouse. Yet she still decorates, more sparingly now, but the gesture is no less meaningful. Along the mantel, she arranges pecan resin Santa figurines, each one a hand-painted gift from friends across decades. Aluminum angels made by an artist she and my dad discovered so many years ago at the Craftsman's Classic Christmas Classic in Greensboro return to their rightful place in the china cabinet, as they always have. My dad's domain was always the tree. He'd string the lights, place ornaments just so, and then step back for my mother to add the finishing touch, a row of Christmas books beneath the tree. The Night Before Christmas and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, mine since 1970, leaned against my dad's childhood favorite, The Life Story of Santa Claus, a 1940 first edition. Those books are worn now, bindings frayed, pages loose, but the stories inside remain as they always were. The tree is now a slender artificial fir, easier for my mom to manage. Yet she fluffs its branches as if it were the same towering tree from my childhood, and she takes her time hanging the delicate glass ornaments she and my dad bought for their first Christmas together 55 years ago at a Kmart in High Point, carefully pulling each one from its original shiny bright box. The red and silver paint has faded, flaked away, but she'd never dream of replacing them. Fragile as they are, these little orbs hold the weight of every Christmas that came before, like tiny snow globes, encasing a lifetime of memories. I know someday these decorations will be mine, but I'm not ready for that. Not just yet. When the decorating is done, my mother settles back, taking in the scene she's created. She smiles, seeing the lights twinkle in their familiar places, remembering my father's steady hands, hearing the echoes of old laughter. The rooms may be smaller, the decorations fewer, but there's a quiet joy here, a contentment that permeates at this space. It isn't quite the same, but it's enough. It's still Christmas, and our hearts are full, filled with so much love for all that remains. And now I'll take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled Towns That Twinkle. It features towns across North Carolina that celebrate the season with sparkling lights, vibrant displays, and festive events that bring joy to the world. Our first stop is Pinehurst. The Christmas season kicks off in Pinehurst on December 6th this year with the lighting of the larger-than-life tree at James W. Tufts Memorial Park. There we have a picture of this enormous tree, perfectly shaped, and it's got a gold ribbon garland, and it has lots of ornaments, lots of small ornaments, but also has lots of white and brown, what appear to be vine orbs. And then there's some large orbs on the ground, and there's a little child, to give the scale of how big the tree is. A little child only reaches the above the stand, the tree stand, up to the first row of garland, so right above the first row of branches. It's a humongous tree. Founded as a retreat in the winter of 1895, Pinehurst Resort has long been a destination for celebrating Christmas. We have vintage photos of kids in the 40s visiting with Santa in the lobby of the Carolina Hotel, says Alex Podlogar, senior media relations manager. Today, the resort is decorated with as many as 30 trees, each with a different theme, as well as poinsettias, lights, and garland, decking the halls and grounds. In the lobby of the Carolina Hotel, a gingerbread village, often featuring replicas of buildings from the village of Pinehurst, is one of the resort's most beloved holiday traditions. The gingerbread village is designed by Pinehurst Resort's pastry team and is displayed inside the Carolina Hotel. It is as beautifully decorated as the town itself. And one of the photos looks like a church, and with a little steeple, and it's got the roof, the cedar shake, quote-unquote cedar shake roof, is actually sliced almonds. And then it's also festooned with very precise piping. And there are also icing trees and some snowmen, and I see some gumdrops and some cellophane windows and such. So very nice. And then we have a picture of the Carolina Hotel in front, and it says the word Pinehurst spelled out in raised letters that are also superimposed with lights on each letter, highlighting the letter itself. And there's the top of the little tower in the front of the hotel, there's a lighted or highlighted wreath. Known as the home of American golf, the Sand Hills Village of Pinehurst was designed by Frederick Law Olmsted to feature curving roads and a central green where community events are often held. Throughout the season, the village's shopping district is decorated with lights, wreaths, and trees, and horse-drawn carriages whisk riders away on a magical holiday experience. And there's a couple of photos here of one showing a portion of the downtown area with some gentlemen walking down the sidewalk, the curvy sidewalk, past stores. And there's a picture of a red door with a giant wreath on it. And also another view of the Carolina Hotel, festooned with icicle lights and lighted garland with ribbons and bows and such. Then there's a picture of the iconic clock in front of the Villager Deli and nostalgic Christmas decorations all around. Pinehurst feels like the set of a Hallmark movie. And I agree, it does. Our next stop is Mocksville. Mocksville is full of ways to make merry in December. Tractors, floats, antique cars, and high school marching bands head down Main Street in the annual Christmas parade. The Davie County Town honors service members and veterans with the annual lighting of the Tree of Honor in Main Street Park. And on one Saturday, horse and buggy rides through downtown give folks a glimpse of merchants' festive window displays. The town has the wonderful feel of a wholesome and peaceful place to enjoy what many have forgotten, said Jeanette Pitts, the town's director of marketing and community development, and to really appreciate the true meaning and spirit of the holidays. The Mocksville Christmas Parade is a jolly affair for all ages. Jim Lindbergh and his wife Pam have dressed as Santa and Mrs. Claus for years. And there's Jim in a sleigh pulled by, well, I don't know if it's 8 tiny reindeer, but they look like they're made from willow or vine, pulling the reindeer. And he's holding out his hands. He's dressed up. He's got a vest that's a plaid or a tartan plaid vest with a red overcoat and hat with ivy and such, white gloves. For more information about the events in Mocksville, visit mocksvillenc.org/hometown-holidays. Continuing on our journey, we stop next in Morehead City. Brad Creelman remembers the year when many people thought the holiday flotilla wouldn't set sail due to dense fog. "We don't cancel," proclaimed Creelman, director of operations for the Friends of the North Carolina Maritime Museum. Then, like the three wise men, he looked to the heavens and saw a single star shining through the fog. At that moment, he knew that the event would take place. This year, for the 32nd time, the fleet of vessels ranging from commercial boats to yachts to kayaks, all aglow with Christmas cheer, will set sail from Morehead City. The flotilla will navigate from Morehead City waterfront to Beaufort, leaving much merriment in its wake. It all comes back to water. The Friends of the North Carolina Maritime Museum hosts members-only viewing party to benefit the organization's junior sailing program. Our next article is Writer Reflections. 11 Our State authors share stories about the role light plays in their holiday celebrations. An Advent tradition. A few years ago, we added pillar candles to our Advent calendar, which is just 24 tea lights on an heirloom cutting board, all of that atop an old card catalog. The number of candles lit corresponds to the day of the season, so the calendar gets brighter as Christmas Eve approaches. But then what? We light our pillars after Advent ends from Christmas night all through 12 days of Christmas and beyond, well into the darkness of January, even February. It turns out after 24 days of light, we grow attached to the candles, a source of quiet comfort there in the corner of the living room. Last year, my eldest chose the pillars, three light blue globes. The younger will get to choose this year. The first year we did it, we used red pillars that I found in some drawer, and one leaked, melted down the back of the card catalog, spilling down the wall. There's still a little wax on the paint in the outlet, a metaphor surely for something. But the lovely thing about candles, we remind ourselves each year, is they don't have to stand for anything and need only to be light. And that's by Drew Perry. Nightlight. The lights moved through the church like a waterfall in slow motion, braids of luminescence falling from the raised altar to the aisles, to the pews, to the hands of each worshiper. Inside the minutes to midnight darkened church, the light grew in an exquisite calculus, one candle flame to two, to four, to eight, to a constellation of pinpoint flickers as far into the darkness as one could see. I watched my daughter's face as she tipped her candle into the light of the person beside her. Marky watched the tiny flame, oblivious to the hundreds of other candles and the hundreds of other flames in the hands of hundreds of others around her. As the congregation began to sing of that silent night and that holy night, she remained transfixed. She held the candle in her two small hands like she would hold a tiny kitten, as if she alone could protect such a fragile thing, as if she alone could keep that light alive and shepherd it to her neighbor, as if she alone could share it, but only after she first let in the light. That's from T. Edward Nickens. And the picture associated with that is of a luminary, a bow-wrapped candle that's lit. Glowing love. I'm often outside in the dark when everyone else is tucked up for the night. I tell myself I have reasons for it, checking the mailbox that I neglected during the daylight, or wandering out with the dogs for a final sniff, but they're only excuses. The truth is, I like that snatch of time, just me and the stars, my eyes slowly adjusting to what had been flat black only moments before. Out in the dark field, looking back the way I've come, I find nearly everything I love spilling out of that house in light. The roaming star nightlight of my younger son flashes past the window like a faint lighthouse. My older son's desk fan washes the edges of the room in a green glow. My wife's laptop silhouettes her face in bed, where I'll soon end up and will vanish into the dark. It's a clarifying few beats out there alone where I only see the light of my little family in our old house, and I know that everything that had been overwhelming during the day has now faded to black, snuffed out by the glow of a place to be and people to love. Little lights reaching out to pull me home. That's from Jeremy B. Jones. The delight of the season. The light of my Christmas dreams is that ethereal bluish gleam of moonlight on a snowy field, the peaceful reflection of a midnight clear. Oh, but wait. Perhaps I'll choose the dreamy lights of the fire truck red bulbs with which I will forever decorate my tree, those big, hard-to-find opaque bulbs that I ordered from overseas. That muted cast of a red, hot candy red, nestled among shadowy branches, holds every memory of childhood Christmases. Oh, but wait. There's my stoop floodlight illuminating a bowed wreath, candlelight on windowsills, car headlights heralding a holiday homecoming, the light of a star in the east. Lighten your heart. Be delighted. A light for the world beams softly from a Bethlehem manger. That's from Susan Stafford Kelly. Starlight, star bright. On a Christmas Eve in the mid-1980s, miles from home, my parents' old brown station wagon finally gave up. No cell phones, no pay phones around. We had to walk home. I was 5 years old, my brother 7, my parents almost 10 years younger than I am now. All I can remember is how safe we were together, and how brilliant the stars were against the black-blue sky in the sharp, cold air. Light travels fast. It takes centuries for the North Star's bright glow to reach us. The starlight we see is moments, twinkles and flickers. It happened centuries ago. We're making memories from memories. More than 3 decades after that Christmas Eve, I can still see the light of those stars in that way, on that night, as 4 people who will never live long enough to see the light Polaris makes today. Many of those friends and family with whom we celebrated Christmas the next day are gone now. I can still see their lights, though. Many of the stars that we see shining have been dead for centuries, but for us, they still shine like they did that Christmas Eve. Shine like those we love. They shine. That's from Eleanor Spicer Rice. A symbol of faith. The candle race runs every night during Hanukkah. You know that Jews light candles to commemorate the sacred oil that lasted 8 days, but what you don't know is that more than 2,000 years later, as kids, we would root for one of the candles. Every night after the prayers, as the candles burned down, we try to guess which one would last the longest. That's ridiculous. The candles burning, visible from outside, were a lovely symbol of faith and of something that made us a bit different, but inside we would breathlessly sportscast. The red looks strong, but oh, the wick just drooped and it's melting fast. Looks like the blue has the edge now. A thing for kids to do and laugh about. Yet it's perfect. Hanukkah isn't about gifts. It's about spirit, about endurance, about light in a time of darkness. You're not supposed to read by the light of the Hanukkah candles. They do no work, even until that last wick gutters and smokes. Their job is only beauty, only remembrance. So if the candle race was silly, it still kept us focused on the light. That's from Scott Hewler. The centerpiece. Our candelabra is ordinary, which is perhaps the most absurd phrase I've ever typed, but it's true nonetheless, especially when compared to its inspiration. The ghost of Christmas presents, grandly ornate candelabras, dripping wax and crystal in A Christmas Carol with George C. Scott, a holiday staple in our home. It was 6 years ago, during one of our family's many viewings of the movie, right after the ghost, bathed in candlelight, tells Ebenezer, "Come in and know me better, man," that our daughter, Oana, age 4 at the time, pointed up at the television and said in her sweet, tiny voice, "Can we get one of those?" Who could say no? I ordered the candelabra, a foot-high matte black number that holds 5 candles, before the film had ended, and it was christened as our Christmas dinner centerpiece a few days later. It found a home atop our hutch after the first of the year and has returned to its place of honor in the middle of our dining room table every December since. Oana isn't as tiny anymore, and having a candelabra on our table may not be as thrilling as the first time, but the light twinkling in her eyes is just as bright. And that's from Todd Delaney. This is called The New Moon. As much as we love full moons and have named them to fit our fancy through the years, all phases of Luna begin with the beguiling, slender, curving disc, that calcium white slip of light we call the new moon. Sometimes she shows us her small wondrous arc, accompanied in a darkened sphere, both silhouetted by starlight, and we may be reminded of an ancient ballad's lines. "Late, late yestreen, I saw the new moon, with the old moon in her arms." Upon seeing that image from the ballad, those on the ship of Sir Patrick Spens feared a dreadful storm. Others may hear or feel the music of the spheres, blithe melodies from the new moon, for bright vibrations do come with the light that takes just over a second to reach our earth. Light from above has guided a lost child home from a mountain wild, and light, likewise, guided 3 kings from their far eastern pavilions past field, fountain, moor, and mountain, to find a certain infant way away to the west, sleeping in a hay-bound manger. Just as we count the suns of our mornings, so too do we follow the moon's waxing and waning over our months. For at the end of every 4th week, for only a few moments hanging there as it sits in the western sky, comes that bright, slender arc, perhaps with the old moon, perhaps without. And either way, seeing her, we may sing this old coastal people's prayer of safe home at light. "God bless the moon, I pray I see another." That's from Bland Simpson. On the air. The camera is my calling. Its warm light bids to stand before it, to appear calm, to tell stories. But light can be as unnerving. When an angel with good tidings appeared before shepherds keeping watch over their flock by night, the light terrified them. I've peered into the camera's light on many Christmases, many eves, sometimes with no good news to deliver. But stories about charity and mercy, heroism and homecomings are what I thrive on, not trouble and tragedy. It brings me joy to put a shine in the eyes of people, especially in this season of light. Whether I'm in the field or in the studio, anxiousness can creep in as I wait. Nervousness never goes away. So I take in a deep breath. I might say a mantra or a silent prayer. Then it's time. The lights go on. The live camera trains on me. Then, as I gaze into the lens, as if the angel's command, "Fear not. Stage fright be gone. Send the darkness fleeing." I read the news and tell my stories, and then after my job is done, I exhale. Even during the Yuletide, being on camera in front of the light is my calling. But I long to be home for Christmas. Once the light fades to black and all is calm, I'm finally able to bask in the glow of this wonderful time of year. and that's by Brian Mims. The dark side of candlelight. We don't think much about life before electric lights, except when a passing thunderstorm or fallen tree limb knocks us briefly back into the dark ages. Even then, we can still read by the glow of our cell phone screens or grab a flashlight and try to find fresh batteries in the dark. Pre-Edison experiences are rare in 21st century lives. It seems kind of romantic, for a little while at least, this idea of living by the flicker of candlelight, until you actually try it. On a winter night last year, I took a candlelight tour in the historic village of Old Salem. After a brief lesson on 18th century holidays, Moravian style, we were handed a metal candle lanterns and led out into the dark streets. It's awkward work, making your way through an 18th century night. I struggled to hold my lantern close enough to cast a faint circle of light, but far enough from my body that I didn't emoliate myself. I had to contend with cobblestones, pick my way over uneven brick paths, and step carefully to navigate rickety wooden steps. As I made my way behind my guide, glad I wasn't burdened with her long skirts, and that the streets were mostly free of the horse apples that would have mined my ancestors' paths, I wondered how people lived like this. How many broken ankles, burned fingers, and squinty eyes did it take to navigate my great-grandmother's nights? These days, there are movements devoted to embracing life by candlelight. There are candle meditations, the better to open your third eye, and suggestions that we embrace our natural circadian rhythms with less light pollution. It all sounds tempting, actually, until you're stumbling through the dark on a winter's night, licking the finger you just singed with melting beeswax. It's enough to give a girl the vapors. That's by Kathleen Purvis. Hanger of the Lights. Regina, Frigida, mother-ripping son of a... Dad, are you okay? One of us asks. I ought to take these lights back to the store and ring them around their neck. I can feel Mom's eyes roll from across the living room. That's the Christmas spirit, dear, she says as she cracks open a cardboard box and lifts out a crinkly plastic tray of red and gold ornaments. I don't know how my father ended up as our family's official hanger of the Christmas tree lights, but evidently it was a permanent post. Every year, Dad strung the lights. Every year, his patience ran out before the green cords were untangled. My emotions in response to the spectacle of Dad's annual battle with the lights changed with my age. Concern, disregard, annoyance, amusement. Well, that sound means we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.